Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
The FA Cup final will see Man United face off against Spurs at Wembley, and two drama-filled semi-finals settled it. Man United got revenge over Chelsea thanks to a blistering start from their front line and some brilliant saves from the one and only Sweary Earps. While Spurs got the better of Leicester with a Martha Thomas winner in the 118th minute. Wow. We look back on all that and discuss Rachel Daly's retirement from international football. Right, Rach, before we get stuck in to 1,000 glorious moments of the weekend, mainly coming from Man United, I'd like to discuss yours first. But also, I think everyone kind of feels like, you know, I'm going to go with the Man United vibe. And actually, I'd like to give a massive shout out this weekend to newly crowned Northern and Southern Championships in the Women's National League, Newcastle and Pompey, Portsmouth, making it through to the champ. Absolutely congratulations. Massive, massive shout out to some of my old Crystal Palace heroes and friends, Paige Bailey-Gale, Amber Stobbs in Newcastle and Lita Rutherford of Portsmouth. Obviously, for the first time in the history of women's football, we've got two now going up into the championship, and rightly so. Absolutely incredible performances, especially from Newcastle, who put away 10 goals at the weekend. Portsmouth didn't even need to play. Still made it through.
Wow. Well, I love when you ask me my moment of the week and then just crack on with yours. So I'd actually picked my moment of the week thinking about you, and it's for you, and it is Mary Sweary Earps. She made some wonderful saves during the match.
Which one of them?
Which you might have noticed. It was the second half one off the Lauren James header, because I asked her afterwards and I said to her, it defies logic. Like, how did you keep that out? Because she was going backwards. Her momentum was, A, she had to, you know, change direction, get across the goal, but she was also going backwards and still somehow managed to claw the ball forwards. And I've watched it so many times. It is a bit of a, like, artwork.
A bit of a finger of God thing.
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah. Who is it? Art of Football. What? No, not Art of Football. What are the guys on Twitter who do, like...
Is it Da Vinci?
They did it for us in the World Cup, where they get football photos and they put them next to, like, really famous paintings and where they look similar. And they did it with one of my shots and it was very cool. I think there must be something out there with Mary Earps diving and some famous, like, Leonardo da Vinci or some such.
It should be hung in the Louvre.
It should.
Any one of those saves could be hung in the Louvre, the National Art Gallery, the Tate, any of those ridiculous
and
saves.
And you've run out of art galleries.
And
the other ones,
cultured.
All those famous ones in the galleries.
Well,
Banksy, where are you?
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, you've done the tree now. People have defaced the tree. Earps is the next obvious choice to go on a street somewhere in London.
Okay, well, I think this point leads us nicely into our first question from A Place of Mine. And they want to know, how happy is Chloe right now that Man United are through?
Let me answer this question with a song. We are the champions,
not,
my
though.
Friend.
Not yet.
Do, do, do.
Too early.
Do. We
Premature.
Will keep on fighting till the end. Do, 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 do. We
Oh, now we're going another.
All right,
can we clip that up so that if Man United don't win the FA Cup, we'll play that one again? Okay, hopefully that answers A Place of Mine's questions. Please don't make me ask her again and get her singing.
We are the champions of the semi-finals.
Okay.
Going to the FA Cup final for the second time in a row. Facing up, obviously, against Spurs. That is tough competition. I know that feels a bit premature to say we are the champions, given the fight that they put in. And we'll obviously talk about the Spurs-Leicester game. But it just feels like a real historic moment. This season has not gone to plan for United. This could be their first WSL silverware. And that feels huge.
Okay, for our listeners' benefit, because we kind of left out the important part of this, Manchester United did in fact beat Chelsea 2-1 at Lee Sports Village.
Say it again for those in the back.
For the first time beating Chelsea as well, which is pretty mega. So
it was a very spicy game. You had the fortune of being there. I had the fortune of sitting on my couch, and say sitting, jumping up, screaming, up, down,
sending messages in the WhatsApp group,
shouting in the WhatsApp,
all in capitals.
All in capitals. It was quite aggressive. Not really getting much response back, if I'm honest. Obviously, you were doing your job.
Bloody signal, Chloe, at Lee Sports Village is
and
non-existent.
Finn was at a rave. So Chelsea had 26 shots to Man United's 5. But let's talk about the first 42 seconds of the game, shall we? Because
barely got me arse on my seat.
I mean, everyone on comms, everyone sort of, all the pundits were saying, wouldn't it be amazing? Man United needs to be on the front foot. They need to be putting the game to Chelsea. Chelsea have obviously had a massive run of games recently. If you're going to sort of get a mildly sort of tired, weakened Chelsea, you know, this is your time to shine. Just come off the back of the Conte Cup defeat. You know, this is Man United's kind of like, let's get in the Achilles heel of Chelsea. So 42 seconds in, you're thinking, okay, it's going to be a tough game, but Man United seems to be on the front foot. All of a sudden, mistake at the back. Yves Perisic, I mean, you wouldn't expect...
Yves Perisic has had an unreal season.
It's that. Out of all the players that you expect in the back line to be making mistakes, Yves Perisic would not even cross my mind. Absolutely not. Makes a mistake. Obviously, the pressure of the game, the pressure of coming up off the back of the defeat in the Conte Cup, the pressure of just, you know, coming towards the business end of the season. And
a player like Galton.
And a player like Galton, obviously. So Galton runs down the line, takes the most of this incredible opportunity, whips this incredible ball in. Who scores the winner?
Lucia Garcia.
It's just...
Scores the winner, the first goal.
Well, it felt like a winning goal for me. Every goal was a winning goal.
Blow the whistle now, game over. 42 seconds in.
It was just kind of one of those, like, in my wildest imagination, I did not think that would be happening within the first minute. Comms didn't think it was happening the first minute.
I didn't think it'd be happening. I still hadn't got my, like, camera up or my arse on my seat. I was still trying to get myself settled and suddenly they were ahead.
But it was a weird one to watch because Chelsea... I mean, they were completely ball watching. I think the defence, I was really critical actually of the defence, the back line, I think, bar Jess Carter, who I think had a fairly reasonably good game. When the Leah Galton cross was coming in, no one was even, it was just purely ball watching. Didn't even see Garcia coming in at all. When that ball goes in, you think, you know what, Chelsea, like you said, mentality monsters, this game is by no means over. We've seen Chelsea do this time and time again, but I didn't see the same kind of, I won't say panache, flair, aggression to kind of get back into the game in that first half. It wasn't like they were knocking and knocking and knocking and actually they were just really unfortunate. I didn't see them knocking. I mean, how was the first half for you, Rach?
The way that Man United came out, hat tip to Skinner starting 11. I think that was really good. I think starting Rachel Williams really threw Chelsea.
Our main last minute gal.
Yeah, they didn't expect, I think, to have to mark a player like her, I suppose. Galton was such a weapon. I thought she was excellent. I think Man United, because a lot of the time when we see them play, they get a good start, but they don't capitalise. And they absolutely capitalised on that first goal, got their tails up and knew they had to keep the pressure on. And I think because they kept the pressure on and got the second goal so early in the 23rd minute, it didn't give Chelsea room to breathe and it didn't give them a chance to get a foothold in the game. And I think that was really smart for Manchester United because, look, I mean, we saw then how Chelsea came out in the second half, completely different second half from them. But that was a really good game plan from United to keep the pressure on, to press Chelsea really well, to defend aggressively.
Mm.
Sometimes United can be a bit too passive in their defence. And actually, they defended really aggressively, giving Chelsea so little time on the ball and very little time to make decisions. I mean, we still saw the likes of Myra Ramirez and Lauren James causing problems and getting in, but they always looked relatively comfortable. So I think, yeah, the game plan was press them early, capitalise. And like you still have to look at it. You look at those stats. United still only had 5 shots. Only 2 of them were on target and 2 of them were goals. And that's where United have struggled this season is A, creating high quality chances and being clinical with those chances.
Absolutely.
And they picked the perfect bloody day to do that.
Didn't they just? Let's talk a little bit then about the 23rd minute goal. This time a Toon delivery.
Same side.
Pretty much this. It was like a template of the first goal. It was literally word for word. Toon delivers in, crosses into the box, and apparently and Rachel Williams sort of heads it back across goal. Hannah Hampton, again, had absolutely no chance. And apparently in sort of the post-match conference, Williams was kind of talking that she'd had this discussion with Toon and Toon was asking her, you know, where do you want the ball placed? And Williams was saying, okay, well, Toon, deliver it into the sort of the central area. Don't worry, chap. I'll find my head on that ball. And that she did.
But also the footwork from Toon to lead up to that. I think she got around about 3 players, sat one of them down, might have been Melanie Leupolz. So that was really nice footwork from Toon. But you could see that United were targeting that side of Chelsea and targeting that area. And I think that happens, you know, when a defender makes a mistake early on, it sounds bad, but you have to be ruthless and target them because you keep putting them under pressure and it doesn't give them a chance then to get their foothold back in the game and to get a grip on the game. And I think United did that quite well. Chelsea did get a goal back.
They did. I think we've got to give Chelsea a little bit of credit. It wasn't all one-way traffic by any means. I mean, two really great Lauren James chances. I mean, the cutback, absolutely incredible, absolutely smashed into the roof of the net. Just before that, you had the incredible Mary Earps save. Well, let's take it a little bit more into the second half then, because it did feel like there was a bit of a reinvigorated energy to Chelsea coming
Absolutely.
In. And I was thinking, okay, well, now Man United are really up against it because it's 2-1. It's really flipping close. You don't know which way this game is going to go. It's only going to take one more goal for Chelsea to be in it and potentially then go on, feel that confidence and go on and win the game.
And you'd put your house on Chelsea getting back into it.
All day. I was thinking, okay, well, we had a good run in the first half. we will take that as a win.
They threw everything at it. They threw all of the attackers on. Emma Hayes absolutely, like, not gambled, but, like, you know, she brought on Fran, she brought on Kat Macario, she brought on Aggie Beaver-Jones. And it's difficult, right? Because you're taking off players who are probably looking the most promising. So I don't know how you decide to make that gamble. But for me, I thought Johanna Wright and Kanarid looked so dangerous. I think she's been one of Chelsea's players of the season for me. I think she's been excellent. She's having a real standout season. And she always looked so dangerous down that side. But yeah, she tried everything. Kat Macario came on, hit the crossbar, almost scored a Katie McCabe-esque corner. Mm-hmm. You know, there were chances. There were big saves from Mary Earps. And I guess as the game creeped on and those shots kept going over or getting saved or being too soft or a tackle went in, it was almost like Chelsea. I mean, you get stressed, right? And I know Chelsea are mentality monsters, as we say, but it does wear on you. You know,
squeaky bum time.
You've just lost a final. The clock is ticking down. You can't seem to get through this goddamn defence or past this goalkeeper. You know, the manager's ringing in the changes.
You've personally, got Villa on Wednesday. You've got Barcelona the week after.
Personally, I probably would have brought on, say, Ashley Lawrence earlier for Paris. Okay. I think she came on in around the 80th minute. I probably would have brought her on a bit
she
earlier.
She was struggling.
Yeah, and just, I know she is excellent for Chelsea, but I just thought Lawrence does give, you know, she's a solid defender, very calm and composed and does offer a lot up front. But look, you know, I think Hayes tried everything. It just wasn't to be. And I think I can understand as well why they'd be a little aggrieved with some of the decisions that were missed, perhaps, for Chelsea, but also United. I think decisions were missed for both sides.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was a bit of a controversial game in points.
Feisty.
Yeah, it obviously got a bit feisty. After the Lauren James goal, she goes over to the goal to pick up the ball, try and get things restarted. Obviously, Chelsea on the back foot. Millie Turner kind of puts the ball underneath her shirt. It's a bit of a sort of, it's a silly move. It's an absolute silly move.
But also it's United's ball anyway, so.
Yeah, 100%. And then Lauren James, as Millie Turner has kind of posted a few pictures on her Instagram, Lauren James puts Millie Turner in a headlock. They both get a booking for the incident. Hannah Blundell kind of steps in to defend Millie Turner because it does sort of get a bit, there's a big argy-bargy sort of going on in the goal. Millie Turner, yes, it's a bit of a kind of silly move, but Lauren James, again, another kind of silly, unnecessary bit of behaviour from her, which I think is just a bit disappointing. But, I mean, Rach, what did you sort of make of it?
I felt she was a little bit lucky as well because earlier on in the game, and maybe neither player got a card because it was earlier on in the game, but her and Zellum was swinging out of her shirt on the halfway line because obviously Lauren James is so difficult to mark and get, you know, get hold of, and Zellum had a proper hold of her shirt, pulled her back, ref blew the whistle, and then an LJ turned around and kind of, they grappled a little bit, and I thought the ref was going to book both of them.
Yeah.
For that, because it was just silly, and it probably would have actually settled the game a little bit to be
for
like
sure, set the
none
tone.
Of that business, because there were, you know, a few challenges later on in the game that were quite tough, and yeah, I just thought she's lucky she didn't get booked for that, because then the later kind of business with Millie Turner could have been pretty problematic. But you know, like May Letizier, another one.
That's another one I've got a flag to. A couple of occasions there on Mayra Ramirez where I feel like she was overly and unnecessarily in the wrong.
Like, Letiz didn't get booked at all.
That's what really surprises me. And like, the worst thing is that Mayra Ramirez, I think, had she sort of flagged it and sort of made a bit more of a song and dance about sort of the tackles that were being thrown and the fouls that were being sort of levied against her, I think she probably would have got the yellows. But Mayra Ramirez was sort of kind of shrugged them off, got up and sort of had this wry smile on her
face.
Well,
she did get absolutely taken out of it by Maya Letizier when a ball was being sent forward, both players kind of running back, or well, Mayra Ramirez running towards United's goal. Maya kind of changed her run ever so slightly so mm-hmm. that she could entirely intentionally get in the way of Mayra Ramirez and kind of body check her. And she, Ramirez obviously wasn't expecting it, so the impact was clearly quite painful because she ended up in a heap on the floor for quite a lengthy bit of time. And that one was one where I was a bit like, oof, you could have been booked for that, because it did feel a little bit intentional and not an accidental collision.
Well, another controversial moment. It's almost like, and another one. Another controversial moment calls for a penalty. The Zellum handball in the box. Obviously, no VAR. The ref has to make a call on it. I have mixed views about it. I obviously feel a little bit biased on this, but you think it?
Yeah,
definitely.
Not intentional, but it's a pen. You know, she's jumping her arms up in an unnatural position. If they had VAR, I think that would have been given. You know, so I can understand that. And I know there was frustration as well about a tackle on Neve Charles. For me, I don't think mm-hmm. that was a pen. I think she went down a little too easily, or kind of like went down after the challenge, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Kind of made a meal of it. But yeah, I think you'd be pretty aggrieved about the handball.
Well, another yellow that was also dished out in the 70th minute was for Mary Earps. Bit of cheeky time wasting.
Can you blame her?
I did think it was quite early for the time wasting stuff. And I was like, okay, this now puts you a little bit on the spot for the having a yellow card with still sort of 20. I mean, it was like, was it 8 minutes extra time? So nearly half an hour left to play. I thought, okay, but interesting. And obviously Mary Earps in front of a home crowd. I don't think she can't do anything wrong. With the saves that she pulled off, I mean, Puma have got their money's worth with their new deal. Yeah, the amount of times it's sort of through to Mary Earps making this incredible save with this beautiful new Puma glove, the deal that she just announced this week, moving from Adidas. I just thought, Puma, the timing could not have been better. We've also got a question in from Sophie on Instagram. She said, Toon was amazing this week. Why do you think we don't see this level more consistently from her?
It happens in football.
For
like,
sure.
You know, sometimes, and you know, United haven't generally been playing great this season. So it's probably no huge surprise that some players are struggling a little bit with consistency. It probably sounds really obvious, but there are some players that when you have a good couple of games under your belt, suddenly you're away and your form just stays at this level. But then there's some players that when you have a mistake or whatever here and there, they let it get to them sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think that can impact your form, and people have been talking about her form, and she went a long time without scoring. So it happens in players' careers, I think. I don't think it's too much to read into, but she has been scoring and she has been playing better. And, you know, she was played for England as well during mm-hmm. the international break. So yeah, a very good game from her.
I think it's more kind of indicative of the sort of wider ethos and sort of thing around Man United. I think they have generally been quite an inconsistent squad this year. I don't necessarily think it's a sort of Toon issue. I think, I don't think she's had a bad season.
No.
I think there's been parts where she's been very quiet.
It's when you set the bar high that everyone expects you to maintain that level.
100%. That is Man United's season all over.
Absolutely.
The bar was set very high last year. Yes, failed to meet it, but can we end on a high? At Wembley?
Quite possibly. Could you end up with a pinky around that bar right at the end of the season?
Yeah, you can. Last week, The Athletic reported that Man United have offered Mark Skinner a new contract. Talks are still ongoing, but it comes as a bit of a surprise probably to quite a few members of the Barmy Army and Man United fans who I think have obviously throughout the season kind of called for Mark Skinner's head at points. But you kind of think, well, I kind of like to see long manager contracts. I think it's quite a nice, we saw the same thing with Gareth Taylor when people sort of questioning whether, you know, was Man City at the sort of top of, had he taken Man City to where he possibly could? And actually I think Skinner has overseen this massive period of transition in Man United. You can't get away from the fact that he was part of the season last year who delivered, over-delivered probably what people thought was in the realm of their expectations. And I think just because they've dipped this year doesn't necessarily mean that Mark Skinner's, you know, shouldn't be able to sort of carry on and sort of continue in that next year. And it could be their first bit of silverware this season. So it's something I like to see.
It's quite natural, though, to talk about pressure on a manager, because when a player is not performing, they get benched, right? When a manager is struggling to find a cohesive or a consistent way of playing with the team, the only way people, I guess, really question them is to say, are you the best manager for this job?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bench a manager for a few months, you know what I mean? So it's quite a normal thing to, and we've seen it with Spurs, we saw it with Carla Ward, we saw it with Willie Kirk. When a team achieves, the expectations raise. And then questions are asked when, because the thing is as well, is that I think there's an element of a team will overachieve and then they will underachieve, mm-hmm. as opposed to just going back to maybe where you would expect them to be at that level of their journey.
It's like Villa.
Yeah. And like Spurs and a little bit like United at times when you've seen them losing to teams you wouldn't expect them to lose against. So it's kind of natural in that position. And Mark Skinner has said it's normal for a manager to be under pressure. And he likes to say how Manchester United is the biggest club in the world. He talks about they belong in the Champions League. They should be there. And with statements like that will come questions and will come pressure and will come, you know, people questioning tactics and all that kind of stuff. There will mm-hmm. be scrutiny. So if you want to talk about your team being the biggest and best in the world and belonging in Champions Leagues and belonging in finals and should be up at the top, then naturally with that comes questions when things aren't going right.
100%. I mean, you heard the kind of same rhetoric with Siobhan Chamberlain, who was on comms for the BBC for the game. And she was saying, you know, questions are going to be asked. You're one of the biggest names in football. You've got, you know, the biggest reputation. You've, you know, as a club, maybe not in the women's side so much, but historically have won absolutely everything. The Alex Ferguson era was huge. I became a Man United fan because of that. And I think the reputation of the club is something that the players obviously need to uphold. But yeah, it's a pressurized job, but
and it's never personal. It's well, not like from a media perspective. It's not personal. It's your job to ask these questions, and it's their job to answer them. And I think it's part and parcel of the role.
Well, talking of a manager under pressure now, Emma Hayes.
She's already out the door. She's not under pressure.
I would say she's under pressure. I think crashing out of the Conti Cup and FA Cup within the space of 10 days is quite. Quite a lot for a club that
and
was
losing
sort of,
to United for the first time
and losing to United for the very first time. So her press conference just before the game drew a lot of attention after she used a story about her son to answer questions about the Conti Cup final incident with Jonas Eidevall, and then quoted a Robert Frost poem when she asked if she regretted anything. So the story with her son was actually quite heartwarming. It's sort of to do with how you shouldn't sort of retaliate and how, you know, you should behave.
I don't feel like she drew that line out of it enough where she'd gone, I have learned that I should not have done this.
Yes. But I think the main talking point from that was the very unusual use of the Robert Frost poem. Some people are saying it was a bit of a distraction from 100%. The fact that they're out of the Conti Cup. I didn't really know what the sort of relevance of the poem was. I did struggle to understand, but it was a very unusual kind of moment because we do see Emma Hayes. She gets asked difficult questions all the time. They've had a difficult season. We've seen, you know, things in and around Chelsea, her leaving, the US Women's National Team announcements. We've seen the situation with Sam Kerr and sort of the charges. And, you know, it's not the ACLs that have happened. It's not been an uncontroversial mm-hmm. season for Chelsea. But every single time she's kind of rode out those, she's very adept in the media. And I think this was sort of one of those situations where I was like, I'm not too sure whether you've hit the right tone and I'm not too sure what the message is that you're trying to deliver. I mean, what did you see of it?
What I thought was, I had a little tea party this afternoon at 3. It was very small, 3 guests in all, just I, myself and me. Myself ate up the sandwiches while I drank up the tea. It was also I who ate the pie and passed the cake to me.
Thank you for making sense of that for us.
So you understand that, you get where I'm coming from.
Absolutely. Mm. I think that's cleared that up. Yeah. I was also, just before
it was a distraction technique, 100%. I mean, come on. Nobody was talking about the push. Nobody was talking about the fact that they were playing Manchester United, which, by the way, is super annoying when you go into a press conference and I'm there. I'm like, can I ask about the tactics?
I've got to say, needy me, when you first started that first sentence, you said, I had a tea party for 3 people at
3
p.m.
And you were probably going,
why wasn't I invited?
Classic Chlo. Oh, you had a lovely anniversary date night with your wife, did you? Why wasn't I there?
That's actually where my mind went.
Anyway, point is, I think it was, she had 2 weeks to come up with that. It was genius. No one was talking about the push. No one was talking about the Conti Cup. And no one was talking about the FA Cup, which is, you know, handy enough. I don't know what the next press conference will be like. Doesn't have much time to plan that one, but
no. A deal has been reached for former Lyon manager Sonia Bonpastor to take over as Hayes' successor. Do we think that Bonpastor is going to be taking over a slightly fatigued Chelsea? We don't know, obviously. There's still going to be so much to play for. They're still in the Champions League, still got every chance of winning the WSL. But Do you think this is worrying for Chelsea? Do we think this is indicative of them sort of going out on this
low?
On this low, yeah.
I think it's a combination of things. I don't think it's just because Emma Hayes is leaving. I don't think it's because the team aren't as good as they were anymore.
No.
I don't, you know, I think there's a combination of there's pressure, right? There's more pressure. It's the last season. She announced early the pressure's on to win this for her. It's what all the questions are about. Every time you get knocked out of a cup, more pressure. They've had a bloody load of injuries. And I know you can look at their bench and see players coming on and think, oh my God, how are they bringing on this caliber of player? But they have had big injuries to big game players. Millie Bright's been out for most of the season. Sam Kerr out. You know, their replacement, Mia Fishel, out. You know, key players that are there in those moments for them, that drag them through those moments, that provide that leadership. That's huge. Other teams are getting better. Other teams are figuring out how to play Chelsea and how to beat Chelsea. So I think it's a combination of different things. I don't think it's one thing. I think, you know, you can't be amazing forever. There has to come a time where other teams catch up and you maybe plateau a little bit. I do think a new manager will bring new ideas. I do think, you know, have players come back from injury. We'll probably see some new signings. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't worry that Hayes leaving is necessarily a reason why Chelsea might not maintain that dominance. I think it's the fact that the league is getting better and other teams are getting better. It is a shame that, like, I mean, it is a shame if she ended up leaving without anything. I think it would be really nice to see her lift a trophy or two before she goes once more.
But that doesn't detract away from the success and the history that she's built with that club. Absolutely. So even if this does become one of those seasons that is just the anomaly, the recent anomaly in Chelsea's very lucrative, successful history, it is what it is and you can't detract away from
it. If she had a number, we'd retire it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. All day. Well, a team that is definitely watching Chelsea very, very closely, Barcelona.
Geraldes was in the...
Yes, he was. Making notes. Yeah, to fly all the way
making
over.
Notes. Well, score in the 47th second. Get Mary Earps.
Sign Williams now. Chelsea travelled to Barcelona for the first leg of their Champions League semi-final on Saturday. How do we see Chelsea's chances against Barcelona? They've got to, Chelsea are facing Aston Villa tomorrow night.
God, give them a break.
It's lit on. And Hayes was saying this, I think it was in press conferences in February, that she has a game every 3 or 4 days, I think, for the next like 3 or 4 weeks. So,
do you know what they have between Barcelona and Barcelona is a week?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
Lovely stuff. They might actually be able to recover and have some, you know, training sessions in between that time.
I am slightly nervous about the timing of this game. I think off the back of the Conti Cup, off the back of the FA Cup, off the back of a very important WSL fixture, Aston Villa are going to take the game to them. They've seen weaknesses. Everyone, I think, has learned from what Man United have done. For Geraldes to be turning up to Lee Sports Village, which is not the most, you know, when you've got Barcelona and you've got the beaches, the nightlife, you've got the sort of, you know, the culture, the architecture, and you go to Lee Sports Village.
What are you saying?
I think that just shows the passion, I think, okay, of this Barcelona side to want to win.
That is a nice Morrison's,
this
to game. Be fair. It's big.
It does.
There's
do
a hotel
some,
as well.
There's some very high value quality products in that Morrison. I have frequented it on occasion.
And there's a petrol station.
As both player and, you know, fan. But yeah, I mean, how do you see Chelsea's chances now off the back of what we saw this weekend, which in the first half definitely looked like fatigue to me?
I'm really interested to see how they use these losses, because it's not really something Emma Hayes or the team will have had to deal with recently, if you know what I mean. In terms of last year, they went out of the Conti Cup and they carried on doing well. FA Cup final, winning the FA Cup, winning the league, semi-finals again of the Champions League, and doing pretty well, all things considered, against Barcelona. So it'll be interesting to see how they use these two losses going into this game. I think the game tomorrow night will be really interesting to see how they come out, because they're going to have to factor in that they've got Barcelona. They're going to have to factor in that Villa have improved over the season. But I do think and I hope that they will use this as rocket fuel going into the Barcelona game. I think it's good that they're playing Barcelona away first. They have to keep the game close. You know, Barcelona haven't been at their, I mean, it's ridiculous to say haven't been at their absolute best, because they're, you know, average. Barcelona is still like
average is winning,
the best team in the world and still winning. But I suppose Chelsea can look at that and say there are opportunities to score goals. There are opportunities to get in around the back. But equally, you know, they just have to be at their, this is the thing, they have to be their absolute best, and they're coming off two big losses and a midweek game. It's going to be hard, but I do think those games give you something extra as a team, and we've seen Chelsea dig it out before. But I really hope that this double blow so close together will really light a fire under them.
100%. And everyone knows that Champions League is something that has been on Hayes' radar for a very long time, but it also has come at the moment where Chelsea obviously sit 3 points behind Man City. They have a game in hand, but there is that, the sort of the aesthetics of having to win to get back to the top again. And it's a lot. Good luck. I'm really excited to see how this this next week goes out for them.
I'll be there tomorrow and Saturday.
Oh, you're so lucky.
No, I won't be in Barcelona tomorrow. I'll be at Chelsea's game tomorrow and on Saturday in Barca.
When are you going to Barcelona?
Very early Saturday morning, because I've got a game on Friday night as well.
Wait a second. I'm free. I will see you there.
Third wheel, getting in my suitcase.
Next on the radar, Spurs battled past Leicester. What a win from Spurs. They came back 1-0 down against Leicester to win 2-1 after extra time. It was a first FA Cup semi-final for both clubs. Martha Thomas, 118th minute, extra time. I mean, my God. At the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, I think there was 18,000 people at the stadium. I think Leicester started quite shaky. There seemed to be a kind of few errors at the back. And then all of a sudden, 12th minute, Rantala sort of running on the outside, cuts inside, smashes the ball past Becky Spencer. Beautiful, beautiful goal.
Semi-final worthy goal.
Yeah, it was just it was a moment of class. I think that's got to go in the Hall of Fame, or at least up for goal of the year, because it was an absolute bit of brilliance. Definitely go and see it if you haven't seen it. That seemed to spur Leicester on, give them confidence. I think then in the 15th
Pardon
minute,
the pun.
Thank you. Tierney, sort of a soft shot from a cutback, and sort of Spurs, sort of Spencer then with a pretty decent save with her trailing foot. But then sort of Grace Clinton really came into the game. I kind of like feel like that goal from Leicester inspired her, and she became quite a threat. Very direct, getting the ball into great areas, being kind of, you know, that distributor in the middle section.
Well, I feel like overall this is a game Leicester will feel like they should have taken their chances. And I think by not doing that, it allowed Spurs back into the game. You know, they felt like, I did think this was going to be close. Having seen them play against each other in the league, it had been really close then. So to see Leicester get the early goal, probably it didn't surprise me too much. It didn't surprise me it was Rantala either. But yeah, I did feel like they were going to edge it. I think they had the opportunities to put another one or two away. And in not doing that, it allowed Spurs to grow into the game. So Naz getting the goal that late, 83rd minute, lovely goal, came from a mistake as well, which would be frustrating for Leicester. But once they got that, it was definitely tails were up. I mean, and they were kind of like, they nearly won it in normal time. And I do think this weekend is a case of some unbelievable goalkeeping, because Kopp in goal made a save off of Martha Thomas' shot, which was incredible. Like literal fingertip save to knock it around the post in the 90-something minute.
Yep.
That would have been the winner. Game over, normal time.
Fingertip. Literal, I reckon it was like probably like the edge of her little finger.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable. The tip of the gloves.
Yes.
Probably. a super save. And there were a couple of really good saves from both goalkeepers. So I do think hats off to both goalkeepers, but it did feel like a game of chances not taken, but I think almost deserved then extra time, because both teams have been so close to each other in terms of when they play each other, and it's always hard to call. And they both have been playing nice football. It kind of was reflective of the season that both of them have had. I know, obviously, Spurs went on to win and made history, and it's wonderful. I'm really looking forward to seeing them at Wembley, really enjoying what Robert Villaham has done with this squad. But also, you know, Leicester have gone through it as well this season off the pitch. And mm-hmm. I think Jen Foster said afterwards, there's no more little Leicester. And I like that, you know, they've really staked their claim, played some lovely football. Both teams have a real confidence about them and a real confidence in their style of play and the way they want to play and a real trust in the game plan. Both teams have gelled really well together. Mm-hmm. And both teams have made some key signings that have been really vital to their success this season. So it almost felt fair that it went to extra time, do you know, that kind of way, because it shows how much fight both teams had and both wanted it so much. But the header from Thomas, incredible. At the death, to be able to rise like that and kind of, it was about wanting it more almost, you know. So to score like that at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, unbelievable.
100%. And against the keeper who was having an absolute game of her life. I think it's absolute credit to both sides that they put on such a feisty, fearless performance. It was like it got so end to end for the last 15 minutes that you really didn't know which way it was going to go. And I think it was quite, I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but obviously with both semi-finals, it was the home team that won. And I think a large part of obviously the Man United, when you panned across Lee Sports Village on the BBC cameras, it was seas and seas of red. You couldn't see any, it felt like it was just red everywhere. You pan across in the Spurs stadium and it's just a sea of like dark blue and white shirts. It just feels like actually there was a massive crowd momentum, I think, for Spurs. Man. They were literally the 12th person, Rachel. Person. They were the 12th person sort of like going and sort of like inspiring those teams to do better. And I think, yeah, to that historic moment for Martha Thomas getting that goal so late on, taking Spurs into a historic first Wembley. I mean, it felt quite emotional for me in a way to kind of like see the journey from...
I feel like you've got a stake in both teams.
Yeah, I kind of obviously support Man United, but I think seeing like a couple of the players that I used to play with at that time, Kit Graham, Jess Naz, Ash Neville, Becky Spencer, like you could see the emotion on their faces to have made, I know how it felt when we made history going into the WSL, let alone making history and going to Wembley. The thought of playing Wembley when we got into the WSL in front of it will probably be a sellout crowd. Oh my gosh, like the emotion of that. And someone like Jess Naz as well. I mean, I can't even remember how, she was about
12.
Like she was always about 12 when we used to play together. And she had a really tough first season. In the first season in WSL, she had an ACL injury. I spent a little bit of time in rehab with her. She was always very quiet, very composed, had a massive like championship season with her and then wasn't allowed to kind of fulfill her potential in the first kind of like couple of seasons with Spurs. To now see her get a goal that meant so much and created history for Spurs, I think that was a real big moment. And obviously the, you know, the stirring of the, she's always had that celebration, the stirring of the pot. I don't really know where it comes from, but I remember her practicing it in the...
Why does it take practice?
Well, no, she was practicing goal celebrations. Oh. And I think that was one of the ones in the sort of armory that she had.
I thought you meant
she
was just practicing that like over and over.
No, I'm not going to say that I had credit for it at all, but I was like, yes, I think that's quite a good celebration.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the mixing bowl. So
there you go.
It came from me. Heard it here first. That is fake news. But Robert Villaham said after the game that we are building something unique. So how do you feel like this season has been building to this moment? Do you think this was sort of written in the stars from the start of the season? Because I didn't.
Not necessarily. I wouldn't go that far. I think we saw very early on the Robert Villaham impact and what he wanted from the squad. I've been really impressed with the way that they've gelled together. You know, they were very much an out and out attacking squad early on in the season. I think he wanted that almost bled into them where they knew that together they could score goals. There were some really early good relationships between the likes of Bizet and Thomas. I think they then realised they did need to do a little bit more work on their defensive side of the game. It meant that they were a little bit less creative than we'd become so used to. It took a little while, I think, for Thomas and England to kind of find their partnership, and Thomas did have to play a little bit deeper at times. But I've been really impressed at the speed in which the team have clicked and gelled. I think we've all learned our lesson in terms of putting too much pressure on teams too early.
Mm.
But I think for me, he has been one of the standout managers of the season. I think they've got some really impressive results along the way. I think if they finish in that kind of, you know, sixth spot, they can be pretty damn happy.
And they've been pushing Liverpool. Yeah, I would 100% put them as contenders possibly to sort of like give that sort of Man United Liverpool section a run for its money.
Yeah, and the biggest sadness for me around this whole thing is that Grace Clinton won't get to play in the final.
Gutting.
And I can't imagine making your first ever FA Cup final at Wembley and not being able to play. So that is gutting. it'll be really interesting to see how this impacts her decision when it comes to whether she goes back to Manchester United or whether she decides to stay at Spurs. I know Villaham obviously wants her to stay, really, really rates her. So yeah, he's talks about wanting to build future Lionesses. You know, he's in it for the long term. And I just, yeah, I really hope that he's given that time to build a squad, because he seems like a very good manager.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. May the 12th is the final, 2:30 p.m.
I thought you were going to say May the 4th be with you or something.
That would have been a great way to end this section, to be fair. Yeah, see you down at Wembley Box Park for that one. Right, we did have a big announcement last week. Rachel Daly announced her retirement from international football on Wednesday morning. England had just beaten Ireland 2-0 in Dublin the night before. Sorry, Rach, not to mention that again. But it is understood that Daly informed her teammates of her decision that same evening. It was a really, really lovely sort of heartfelt post. It was something sort of along the lines of, don't be sad about this sort of ending, but smile because it happened, which was really, really adorable. But it comes after 84 caps and 16 goals, competing across four major tournaments, including the Olympics for Team GB, England's victorious Euros, the 2019 World Cup, and the latest World Cup, of course. Rach, were you expecting this? Because I wasn't.
No, I absolutely wasn't expecting it. I also, it was an unusual time, yeah. I thought, to do it. Got it to see her go. Kind of thought she'd have stuck around for another Euros. I know she's kind of been playing that backup number nine, but I don't really feel like there is another backup number nine that's just readily there to take over. So that's what kind of came as a surprise. You know, it's probably more than just her feeling she's not getting game time. There could be more to it. You know, she maybe wants to focus on her club football, wants to be closer to her family. She's been through a lot as a player. So really gutted she's gone, but also kind of leaving on a high, I suppose, because what she's achieved in her career is incredible. I don't think there's many players that can say they've done what she's done in terms of playing at international level in two different positions, either end of the pitch, two completely different roles, and doing that to the level that she's in a team that's winning Euros and getting to a World Cup final is incredible. And I don't want to say that I don't think she's gotten the accolades she deserves, but I perhaps think people don't realise how difficult it is to be that good in two positions. And I think that Rachel Daly made versatility sexy. I think...
Ooh, what a line.
Versatility used to be a dirty word when you ask players about being versatile, and they used to not like being considered versatile. Because,
jack of all trades.
Yeah, I think it was that kind of idea, master or none kind of vibes. And actually, her versatility was her biggest asset and was such a weapon to England, because they knew they had two players in her, which is incredible. And to be able to essentially have almost like an extra player in the squad of someone like her caliber, things might not be working up front. Cool. Come off from left back and will you go up front and score a few goals?
There, go on.
Do you know what I mean? Like, incredible from her. So unbelievable career, some brilliant memories. And she's definitely gone out on a high.
The timing for me was definitely an unusual one. I was kind of expecting that we would see her again in another major international tournament. Obviously, with Team GB not going to the Olympics this year, she would have to wait until 2025 for the Women's Euros. And I kind of thought that she would have a fairly good chance of being in that squad as sort of one of the more experienced members of the Lionesses.
And her versatility.
Yeah, I mean, sort of without Russo, there sort of aren't many out-and-out number nines ready for senior football. Do we kind of feel like potentially there's sort of room in the next year and a half for Serena to sort of be nurturing some of this talent to come in, or do we...
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see more of Beth England potentially. I think as she's come back from injury and finding her feet in that Tottenham squad, you know, I think end of this season and into next, we'll start to see more from her, potentially see her back in the squad. You could be looking at Aggie Beaver-Jones. I know Chelsea...
Jess Naz stepping up.
Jess Naz, but Jess Naz tends to play wider. So does Aggie Beaver-Jones for under-23s, but not for under-23s, for Chelsea. For under-23s, she tends to play central. So she's another potential, which is exciting. But I think that also then made that decision more surprising, because we don't necessarily have that out at number nine. Now, I know Serena has played Lauren Hemp centrally sometimes. Mm-hmm. We know, for example, Beth Mead can do it. But I do think Daly offered something different to Russo, in a similar way that England offers something different to Russo. So it could be a case that England is going to be that next player to step in, because she's that dogged out and out poacher type striker. And with Russo, you can kind of get that false nine type of player from her. So you do need, once again, that versatility in that position.
Well, I'll definitely be sad not to see the kind of like post...
cowboy hat.
Yeah, there's so much character and personality, not just on the field, but like the celebrations that she had. I mean, there's a massive memory of her. Tina Turner singing that on stage, River Deep, Mountain High, at Trafalgar Square during the Euros party. If she could have a farewell song, what do you reckon we would pick for her? Do you reckon it would be that? Or do you think...
Simply the Best.
Whoa!
Bing, bing, bing. Better than all the rest.
Better than anyone. Can play in any position.
Oh, that was shit. You ruined it.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Right.
This is now a musical podcast. Next week, Frozen.
And on that horrendous note, thank you so much for listening. Rach, before I ask you where you're headed this week, you've got an exciting interview out on Thursday. Tell us more about it.
Baggers, Sophie Bagley from Brighton.
Legend.
Goalkeeper. We've not given goalkeepers enough love on this pod.
Agreed.
I chatted with Brighton's number one yesterday ahead of their clash with Everton at the Amex on Friday. She spoke about learning to play more with her feet, how Brighton pulled off the masterclass against Manchester City earlier in the season, and which outfield player fancies themselves most as a goalkeeper. So contain your jealousy, please, Chloe.
I'm absolutely gutted that I couldn't fit it into the schedule.
I told her that as well. I said it numerous times, Chloe's going to be raging.
did she mention me? Did she say anything?
I did, and she nodded like she knew who you were. So that's good.
I'll take that as a win.
Yeah.
Rach, where are you this week? I feel like you've got an absolutely busy one.
Yeah.
Here, there and everywhere. Go on.
Chelsea, Aston Villa tomorrow. Brighton, Everton on Friday. Barcelona, Chelsea on Saturday and Arsenal, Leicester on Sunday.
I'll pretty much be covering all of those from the very comfort of the edge of my sofa.
The
edge of my sofa.
You don't sit on the full thing.
Well, I think the Aston Villa Chelsea game is another edge of the seat type vibe. It almost feels like a title decider type
game. The Barcelona Chelsea one, you'll be on your feet.
What is that?
Pacing.
100%.
Behind the couch.
Maybe I actually will. Behind the couch, behind the bar. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and X/Twitter. I am Morgie_89. Rach is at Girls on the Ball and we are at @Upfront_Pod. You can also find us on YouTube at Upfront Pod. See you on Thursday.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.